Welcome to Call Forder Connect, the podcast where a call can make all the difference in someone's life. I'm Kim Clyden, and each week we'll explore something beautifully simple but profoundly powerful, picking up the phone and calling four or more people. Four real conversations, four chances to remind someone they matter. This movement was created by Charles and Tracy Alder, who've spent decades supporting Australians through fire, flood, drought, and just as devastating, silence. Because loneliness isn't just a feeling, it's a quiet crisis, chipping away at our mental health, fueling anxiety and depression, making people feel like they don't belong. Left unchecked, it can become life-threatening. Together, we can break the cycle of isolation, remind our friends and loved ones they're seen, valued, and never alone. In each episode, we'll hear stories from people making connection a habit. Community leaders, everyday Aussies, and voices from around the world who are proving that something small can have a massive impact. So let's get into it, because the world doesn't need more noise. It needs more human connection. We live in a vast country where in many remote regions, people can be hundreds of kilometres from the nearest town and from regular social connection. According to the 2023 State of the Nation report, 35% of rural Australians reported feeling lonely. That's compared to 30% of those living in metropolitan areas. For farmers, geographical isolation can simply be part of their lifestyle. For others, it may be a choice. But being alone is not the same as loneliness. Gary Bentley knows this reality well. Raised in central west New South Wales, his love of the bush shaped his early years. While a 40-year career in journalism gave him a wide lens on people and their world. Now working as a counsellor, Gary has seen firsthand the profound impacts of loneliness in regional and rural communities. Gary, sharing people's stories offers an insight into their lives. Why did you choose to be part of their healing?
I felt that I had some skills in that area. I liked hearing other people's stories and I liked telling stories. And I liked helping people. And that was all tied in with the journalism too. The journalism's all about hearing people's stories, and so is counselling.
How do you think those conversations help people deal with their realities and challenges in life?
People like to tell their story. They like to have an audience. But most importantly, people like to be heard. It's one thing to tell your story, but if you don't have an audience, it's just wasted. And people don't know where to turn. We like to have someone hear us.
How would you describe growing up in central west New South Wales in relation to the impact it had on your life and perspective?
Growing up in central western New South Wales was a very ordinary existence. There were no particular challenges there. It was a good family life. It was a good country town that I was raised in. So that gave me some sort of perspective. But it was one of those towns that when you left school, you left town because there were no jobs. In all this time, nothing's changed.
How do you think your experience from country childhood to journalism and meeting lots of people and sharing stories shape who you are today?
Oh, well, I think they make me a more sympathetic person, and certainly family does that as well. I've got a large family. There are always challenges there to be faced. There are always someone there to assist and advise. But importantly, people have to want that advice and assistance. You can't force it on them. It's the same with counselling. People have to put their hand up and say, I have a problem. This is my problem. How can you help me? If they don't put their hand up, you can't help them.
When I first met you in regional New South Wales, you were supporting farmers in rural areas as a counsellor. What challenges were they facing?
Well, at that stage, the farmers were facing all sorts of challenges thrown at them by Mother Nature. We saw them through flood, fire, drought, mice plagues, you name it. They faced all sorts of things like that. One of the things is that they deal with, though, is isolation, because farmers live an isolated life. And that was one of the challenges that they faced. But generally, farmers are very resilient and they learn to deal with their isolation. A lot of the young people these days move away from farms because they don't enjoy the challenge of isolation, and they seek other areas to live in and other areas to work in. But yeah, isolation was one of the main things that we dealt with farmers and the problems that causes.
What sort of problems did you find isolation causes for people who obviously choose a bit of, you know, solitude in life?
Yeah, isolation can be very damaging to a person. I think the whole thing is that we can be alone as far as our life goes. And loneliness, though, being alone is an option. We opt in and out of it. We choose when we want to be alone, and we choose when we want to re-enter society and re-enter relationships. But being alone gives us the chance to recharge our batteries, to rethink, to settle, to focus. It gives us all those opportunities. But loneliness is a different thing altogether. Loneliness is disconnection from ourselves and our ability to be alone. And if you disconnect, you lose perspective. And that disconnection in loneliness leads to all sorts of mental health challenges, and mental health challenges link in with physical health challenges. So it's a nasty thing to get involved in. And a lot of people don't realize that there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. I find that it's like being sad or being depressed. I encounter people who say, "I'm depressed." And you dig down into that and you say, "Well, you're not really depressed, because depression is a really dark place to be, and you need help to get out of depression." You're feeling sadness. You know, so there's a big difference. One of the things I liken it to is you talk to people who are coughing and sneezing, and they say, "I've got a dreadful dose of the flu." And you look into it, well, influenza is one thing, but a cold is another thing altogether. And I think people tend to catastrophize at times, self-diagnose, which is a very dangerous thing to do. But loneliness is a very real thing. And a lot of people suffer from it. If you're in that place of loneliness, you can feel isolated and unable to escape, and you need some assistance to get out of that.
As you say, loneliness can be quite debilitating, and it starts to erode our own confidence and our own sense of self. How are you able to assist people in dealing with loneliness?
It's just communication. Basically, communication. That's so, so very important. People need someone to communicate with. As I said, they need to be heard. We all need to feel that sense of connection that comes from realizing that someone else is thinking about us, that we are in someone else's thoughts. We're not alone in our own thoughts. Someone else is out there. Someone else is thinking about us. And if they make that connection, it makes all the difference.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be every day either. I mean, I find there are friends and relationships I've created many decades ago, and I don't have to talk to them all the time. But when they do reach out, or when I reach out to them, it's like no days have passed, you know, between the last time we spoke. Have you ever experienced loneliness in your life?
Not loneliness. I've been alone at times, but because of the family that I've got around me, it's not been loneliness, because I haven't been isolated. I haven't cut myself off deliberately or accidentally cut myself off. Yes, there's been times I've been alone, and you can be alone in a relationship anyway. If you're in a marriage or partnership, you can feel alone. That doesn't mean that you're suffering from loneliness, because you've got the rest of the world around you. So yeah, I have experienced alone, but not loneliness.
You know, it's funny, I've often said that sometimes I feel lonely, especially through COVID. It was really quite a difficult period where my husband was going to work every day, my grandchildren and my daughter, they were protecting me as an asthmatic from coming into contact with them. So I look back on that period and I felt very alone, but also lonely, because there was no one in my immediate circle that I could actually go and see. And I find that face-to-face contact so valuable. How would you rate having face-to-face connection as well as those calls?
With counselling, face-to-face contact is all important. It's the most valuable form of counselling. Failing that over the phone, or as we're doing now, a Zoom connection, things like that, this is almost face-to-face. But I can't see your body language, so I can't read that, and I can't use that as a tool in my counselling. But we can email people. We can always reach out to people. There are always people out there to reach out to, whether they're people we know or whether they're organisations that we need the assistance of. There are always connections to be made. And that's the difference between loneliness and alone. We can be alone, but there is somewhere to reach to. If we're suffering from loneliness, we lose that connection. There's a breakdown inside us, and we feel that there is nowhere to turn and no one to reach out to.
That sounds like it's quite the conundrum, because if people are lonely and they're on that downward spiral, isolating themselves and then disconnecting from their emotional connection to having other people in their life, how is it that they are able to reach out for assistance?
Well, some people don't. I mean, some people suffer from loneliness, and some people die alone in their loneliness. We hear stories every week about people being found in their homes and they've been dead for a fortnight or more, because they are not only alone, but they're in lonely situations. So their loneliness has overwhelmed them. They've got nowhere to turn. Sometimes it's impossible to convince people that they should reach out. Some people won't reach out. Some people are unable to reach out. But that's why counsellors are there, and that's why all these organisations are there, to encourage communication and encourage connection.
You know, I believe that we need to return to a more community-based society. So what actions do you think as individuals or as communities we can take to help alleviate other people's suffering?
One of the things that I encourage people to do is just be more friendly, be more compassionate. You can go to the supermarket and you can walk past people, and sometimes a smile is a connection. And sometimes a smile can make a difference to a person's life, particularly if they are alone or lonely. It can make all the world a difference. And it takes nothing to be kind to people. It takes nothing to be compassionate. People are a bit reluctant these days because some of the reactions they get from other people are not nice. There are some nasty things happening, but that shouldn't stop us from being kind to other people. We expect people to be kind to us. We should be kind to people in any environment, in any opportunity we get.
You talked about being alone and being lonely and how they're two separate things. How do we identify if we are actually going into that phase of loneliness and perhaps catch ourselves?
It's a thin line. We can slip into loneliness from being alone, the same way as we can slip into depression from being sad. And sometimes it's difficult to stop ourselves doing that. But we should make a friend of ourselves. Not enough people are friends with themselves. And that's one thing I encourage with my clients. Get to know you, get to know who you are, get to know what you believe and why you believe it, and be kind to yourself. And that's part of it. And if you're kind to yourself and you know what you believe and you are connected to yourself, there's a better chance to identify when you're going to slip over the line from one state of mind to another.
Depression is something we've become more aware of. How do we identify loneliness in someone else? I mean, what signs should we be looking for, like in someone who's depressed and withdraws? Are there similar things that we might be able to look for in people's behavioural changes?
Yeah, isolation, I guess, is the main one. People will isolate themselves. They will refuse any contact from anybody, family or friends or former family or friends. That indicates that there is a deeper problem there if they isolate. And sometimes it's very hard to break through that isolation to reach the individual involved, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't try. It does mean that sometimes we won't succeed.
You've obviously agreed to chat with me on this podcast as part of Call For to Connect. We both have a long history with Charles Alder, who's the founder of this initiative. What did you first think when he floated the concept with you?
I thought, what a great idea. Anything we can do to communicate and improve communication is important to anyone's mental health. And so many people out there who would benefit from a phone call, would benefit from contact, and it's a simple process, it's a simple procedure, and it can make a difference in a person's life. So it's worthwhile.
Is it something you think you could adopt in your life, or is it something you're already practicing?
It's something I practice, not as a ritualistic thing, but ringing people and making contact. As you said too earlier, you can catch up with people and pick up where you left off. So that communication is important. But the more people that we can talk to, the more people, like, for example, if I go for a walk around my neighborhood for exercise, if I see someone in the yard, I'll say hello. If they respond, you can extend that conversation. If they don't, it doesn't matter, you keep moving. But you've made your effort, you've made your contact, and they realize that there is someone out there who has actually seen them on that day. And you might be the only person that makes any sort of contact with them. And that can help people who are feeling alone, and can certainly help people in their loneliness.
As a former journalist and someone who makes a living out of asking people questions, I think it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask you to give us all a couple of ideas as to how we might use questioning to start a conversation with someone. I mean, what sort of interest should we be showing to make that conversation flow?
People like to talk about themselves and their own interests and their own activities. They don't necessarily want to hear what we do or who we are or where we're from or whatever. They want to tell their own story. So you give them the opportunity to tell their own story. It's like the are you okay thing. Obviously, if you say to someone, are you okay, then you've got to hang around for the answer. You don't just walk away from that. You've got to listen to what the person says and respond to it. In any conversation, people like to talk about themselves and tell their own story.
I find the use of open questions, discovery questions, very handy. I mean, the problem I find with are you okay is that you can just say yep or no. It's not necessarily one that allows people to tell a story. So in your journalistic experience, what sort of questions would you ask someone to allow them to tell their story?
In journalism, it's the who, what, when, where, why and how. You've got to answer all those questions in your storytelling. But as I said, it's the who first. Who are you? What are you on about? What's your problem? What caused it? So again, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. You can go through that with any conversation. But it starts with the who. It starts with the focus being on the person you're talking to. The focus isn't on yourself, it's on them. Certainly in general conversations, as far as a counsellor goes, we've got to be careful. We can't cross boundaries. I guess one of the things you can always, you start off a conversation about the weather. You can talk about something, you know, the traffic. You can talk about all the general things, just to open up that vein of conversation. So you've got to talk about just general stuff and ease into the more important things. But yeah, those sort of things, you just open up easily and you then move into what the other person needs and what you see that they need. And sometimes they're not prepared to go any deeper than that. And you have to respect that as well. You can't force people to tell their story if they don't want to. But most people do want to, with a little bit of encouragement, and they will do it. They will tell their story. They will tell their stories of woe and their stories of concern. They'll talk about their successes and failures. They just need a little bit of encouragement, because quite often they face situations where someone will say, like, are you okay? And they'll say yes, and the person will turn and walk away. It doesn't go any further. So they've been disappointed in the past. So you've got to just take it nice and carefully and quietly. You've got to have the time for the conversation. So don't start a conversation if you don't have the time, because you don't know how far it's going to go or how deep it's going to go. And you don't want to bail out at the wrong time.
That's all very sage advice. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. It's been great to catch up with you after all these years. Gary, you take care of yourself, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Thank you very much, Kim. Thank you for your time.
Councillor Gary Bentley sharing his pearls of wisdom in the hopes of making your world less lonely. You can hear more of his wisdom via his podcast, The Strength Within. And don't forget to connect with Call 4 online. Go to call4.org and sign up to set up your call list. You'll receive reminders to call those you care about and help them feel connected and valued. Until next week, call 4 to connect.